I want you to think about taking a step back and imagining that this quality or this behavior that you want to change in yourself is something that a close friend, your child, your niece and nephew, someone who you deeply care about is struggling with. And imagine how you would speak to that person about this behavior or this tendency or this quality that they're beating themselves over. Now try speaking to yourself using those words, using that tone. See how it feels in your system. Because what you're doing is you're flipping the script from failure to kindness and learning. And that shift is such a critical unlock in you being able to build your confidence.
Welcome to Conversations at Basecamp, the professional development podcast designed to help you confidently ascend the corporate climb. I'm Kim Havens.
And I'm Noah Reese, and we're the co-founders of Kahila, a digital platform providing leadership development for people on the rise.
This podcast is your exclusive look into our Basecamp for intentional career growth.
Each week, we'll dive into essential topics to master high-impact power skills, and we'll also decode leadership secrets and navigate game-changing trends to future-proof our careers.
So, whether you're a seasoned professional seeking to refine your approach to leadership development, or an ambitious person charting your course, Conversations at Basecamp empowers you with actionable insights and tangible takeaways.
Welcome, welcome everyone. I'm Harriet Cole, Director of Programming here. And today we have a very special guest to talk about something that I do believe is important to all of us, about cultivating confidence from within. All of us, even those of us who believe we are super confident, we can get an extra boost. And hopefully today you will learn some ways to make that happen. And so our conversation today is with a very special woman. She is Nancy Choi. She's an accomplished executive coach and general manager, senior director at Nike. She was a principal analytical lead there. And as you see here, she specializes in personal transformations, executive presence, leadership effectiveness, team vision and mission, and mindful stress reduction. Nancy lives and works in Amsterdam. Nancy almost went to Seoul, Korea to train to be a K-pop singer when she was a pre-adolescent. Join me now in welcoming Nancy Choi.
I was trying to think of what my walk-in song would be. We'll save that for another time.
Yeah. But you know what I love? I love that you shared the fun fact, because isn't it so important to remember the joy in your life and to hold on to it, to nurture it, whatever it is. It can be the silliest thing, but we have to hold on to that. That helps to build confidence.
Absolutely. And also, speaking of confidence, I think one of the things that really helps is to get to know each other as humans. You know, we're about to embark on this 45-minute, one-hour conversation. And I just wanted to share something with you all that doesn't sound intimidating or like, you know, I'm this person who's this expert, but rather I'm just another human being who almost had an entirely different career path. And so I'd love for us to connect on this level and just keep this really conversational and human, because I think that's important.
I want to share something with everybody, Nancy, that was so wonderful when I met you. So actually, Catherine met you before you went on sabbatical, and I met you after you went on sabbatical. Nancy had the best pause for her career, and I know she's going to tell us about that. I just want people to understand the value of pausing in terms of building that inner confidence. So could you start off by just telling us a bit about that experience that you had, what you did, and what it meant for your confidence building?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to start there. Yeah. So I think one of the most important things with leadership is actually to take moments of pause, whether it's pausing for 5 minutes in between meetings and just taking a breath. Or in my case, I took a sabbatical for 5 weeks to really unplug after an intense series of years and a lot of changes in my work. I spent 2 weeks in Bali, Indonesia, and I spent 2 weeks in Thailand. And the whole purpose and intent of the sabbatical was really around surrender and play. because I was really, really overly productive for a really long time. And I got into this mindset, really like being in control of everything in my schedule and rushing through my days. And so I thought it would be really great for me to just learn for 5 weeks how to just surrender and not be overly, you know, in control and see what happens and play and experience joy in my life. And as you can imagine, that gave me a lot of perspective. And coming back, you know, I've definitely noticed that it's really important to integrate surrender and play into our leadership and our work as much as we can. So I am kind of in a unique position. And so I'm excited to share with you wearing two hats. One is I'm a senior director at a Fortune 100 company leading a large team. And so I really understand the challenges of being a diverse leader in a corporate setting. And at the same time, I do executive and career coaching, and I speak with a lot of different leaders at different levels of their career about the challenges that they face. And what I can really appreciate is that courage and confidence are so critical when it comes to leadership skills. And today I'm going to focus more on confidence because I find it to be so personally relevant for me. What I would love coming out of this conversation is that you learn from some of the things that I've experienced, that I'm able to impart some of the learnings I've had in my career, but also that you have some tools, and that's the coaching side of me, that you can start to use tomorrow in your day job if you wanted. And so what I'll do is I'll talk a little bit about how I think about confidence, what are some traditional advice I've gotten, what I think about that, and then some practical tools, and maybe invite you to some experiences within the session as well, so we can all practice a little bit together in this safe space. So confidence. When I think about confidence, it really is about the opposite of shame and fear. When you really see true confidence in the room, you can really experience a lack of shame and a lack of fear in that individual. And so this is a little bit of what I want to touch on, which is typically the advice and the mentorship that you or others may be getting in your career when it comes to confidence, maybe about how to play the game better. But I actually think that the more important part of building confidence is about the inner journey. But first, let me share a story. So when I was a relatively new manager in my career, I went to a women's leadership workshop, and it was with a women's leadership coach. And she gave a lot of advice, and it was all about how to play the game. And she called the game the King of the Hill. Basically, who's the King of the Hill? And she talked a lot about this very male context that we all navigate. And I remember sitting in that workshop thinking, wow, there was so much really useful practical tips that she shared. So I'll share a couple of the advice she gave with you, because I do think that they're actually really valuable. One is around teaching people how to treat you or how to speak to you. So how you carry yourself, how you speak, how you listen, how you navigate meetings and presentations. Oftentimes, underlying that is you teaching people how to treat you, how to speak to you. And so she gave some practical advice on how to speak and how to carry yourself. She also talked about how oftentimes men hire for confidence, not for competence, which means that bringing humor and swagger into your ways of being in the workplace often lands better with male leaders than overly focusing on being competent and knowing all the answers and being hyper-prepared. She talked about staying connected at work with what's visible and what's working well, so that you really are able to create more visibility for yourself and have more of a platform at work. And maybe one last thing I'll share is she shared the importance of breaking the work that you're doing into small pieces and feeding people very frequently with the results that you're driving, so that they're consistently coming along the journey with you rather than waiting until the last minute when you have everything done and packaging it together, but kind of having someone process all of that at once. So the advice isn't actually bad, and maybe some of you have taken notes, but I do think there's a really critical ingredient that's missing in that advice, and it's about the inner work. Because if you think about imposter syndrome is really about alignment with your own power or a misalignment with your own power. And when you have imposter syndrome, chances are you're actually an imposter to yourself. You've been for so long focusing on how to fit into the cultural context around you, and I think this is especially true for diverse leaders, that you ultimately don't remember who you are and how you can belong in a more authentic way. So if we go back to one of the advice that the executive coach had around teaching people how to talk to you, My question wouldn't be, how are you teaching people how to talk to you? It would be, how do you talk to yourself? And what if we started there first? And it took me a really long time to change how I talk to myself in a way that felt more loving, more accepting, and more supportive. Because not all of us have that role model to us, right? In the cultures or the context that we live in. And so it's an actual skill to learn how to talk to yourself more kindly. And we call that self-compassion in the mindfulness world. And ultimately, I think what's so important about that is developing the skill of being your own inner ally and really championing yourself, being in your own corner and having that be the starting point for building confidence. So some of you may be fans of Brené Brown. I certainly am. And she has an equation. And what I've basically done is taken that and then kind of created my own interpretation of it, which is the equation of grounded confidence. So she talks about three ingredients that are important for grounded confidence: skills, curiosity, and practice. So I talked a little bit about some examples of skills just now, self-compassion. There are loads of other skills that are involved. Befriending your judge, which we'll touch on a little bit later. Regulating your nervous system. What that means is when you feel yourself going into fight or flight, catching it, and then having some tools that you use to bring yourself back into safety in the moment. Uplifting your self-belief, owning your self-belief and your self-identity, and having tools that allow you to remind yourself of who you are and how powerful you are. So those are examples of skills, and there are so many different ways that you can learn and develop those, and we might even practice some of them today. The second part is curiosity, and curiosity is ultimately about having a beginner's mindset. I had a conversation with a mentor of mine a few months ago, and he put it so brilliantly. He said, being a master at something, mastering leadership, mastering confidence is so overrated. The whole fun of life is to be a beginner, to always be learning, to always be growing. And so curiosity, staying in a state of wonder, what am I learning in this situation, is a really, really, really good reframe that'll help you find more joy in the process of developing more confidence. And the last ingredient in this is practice. Practice makes perfect. It's really about progress over perfection. And that word perfection might be triggering to some of you. As a recovering perfectionist, it is for me. Practice, repetition, experimentation, learning, and also making sure that you're investing in habits that serve you and help you with some of these skills that you're trying to develop. So let's unpack some of this together today. I'm going to try something bold because I don't see any of you, but I'm going to ask you to do something with me for a second, which is think of a behavior you want to change about yourself. Something maybe that isn't too triggering for you, but something you often beat yourself up over. And first, notice what kind of words and thoughts and tone you use when you get triggered, when you think about this behavior that you don't like about yourself that you'd like to change. And now I want you to think about taking a step back and imagining that this quality or this behavior that you want to change in yourself is something that a close friend, your child, your niece and nephew, someone who you deeply care about is struggling with. And imagine how you would speak to that person about this behavior or this tendency or this quality that they're beating themselves over. Now try speaking to yourself using those words, using that tone. See how it feels in your system. So if you ever find yourself overthinking or beating yourself up about this next time, I want you to remember this moment and remember the tone and the words that you used and tap into this friendlier, more compassionate voice with yourself. Because what you're doing is you're flipping the script from failure to kindness and learning. And that shift is such a critical unlock in you being able to build your confidence. Here's a personal example from me on how I flipped the script. So I mentioned earlier, I'm a recovering perfectionist. You know, I'm very hard on myself anytime I make a mistake. A recent example that comes to mind, it was messing up during a presentation to a large senior audience. I got pretty upset at myself And this is something that, you know, over the course of my career, I've really worked on, because it turns out this is a very, very strong tendency that women have. I've dug into the research and it basically shows that women tend to express anger inward towards ourselves, because culturally, a lot of the times we're not really allowed or empowered to express anger outward. So self-criticism is something that women have a much stronger tendency to engage in than men. So here's how I flipped the script in the moment. Going from asking myself, why did I mess that presentation up? I could have been so much better prepared if I had just said it this way and that way, et cetera. I started spiraling. And then I was able to step back and ask myself a different question. What did I learn from that experience? So one learning, for instance, was that I didn't have a lot of allies in the audience and in the room. And I actually think that this is a pro tip, actually, for when you have presentations to bigger audiences or to senior audiences. It's usually a good idea to enroll some allies in the room for a few reasons. One is you can kind of look at them in the audience when you're feeling stuck or you're feeling like you're not really kind of doing great, and you can feel that connection and that support. And then secondly, it also helps to have other people who support the message and are aware of the message you're trying to land in the room. So just giving them a little bit of a preview and having a pre-conversation with them on, hey, here's kind of where I'm trying to take this conversation. I'd love your support in room. That goes a long way. So doing those little changes and doing a little bit of that work to connect with people ahead of time often can help offset some of these moments that we have in presentations. But the key thing here I want you to remember is actually that beginner mindset, that it's so much more fun to ask ourselves a different kind of question in those moments.
Nancy, things are going so incredibly well. I thought this might be a good time for us to take a look at the poll to see what our attendees had to say about confidence. So here we go. Has lack of confidence ever held you back from a career opportunity? Okay, 78% of the people said yes. I think that that's a resounding yes for that, which is pretty powerful and strong. Two, what work challenge most impacts your confidence? And these were two were pretty close. Lack of recognition and juggling personal professional responsibilities were pretty close. So I think this shows us there's a lot of pressure. Confidence, when people don't have it, it can really make them tumble, you know. So just as you're sharing, if you'd like to address the poll and what you think that means to you. And here's someone in the Q&A who said, love the idea of a recovering perfectionist. Indeed. Actually, let me share with you. I had a young woman come to work for me literally for a week, 1 week, Nancy. She was amazing. She was doing a good job. We were course correcting as we went along. And on the Saturday of that week, she wrote to me to say, I can't work with you anymore. It was too intense for her. And she had told me during the week that she's a perfectionist. And I mean, I know we use that word a lot, but in her case, because I think because I was giving her course corrections, really because she was doing well. So I was helping her to do even better in alignment with me. It was too much for her and she ran for the hills. So this notion of how being a perfectionist can completely dash your confidence and make you incapable of doing things. So it kind of disarms you and you lose whatever drive you had, that is so real. So I'd love for you to speak to both the poll and this notion of, you know, dig in a little bit more about perfectionism, because I think it's a lot more intense for people than maybe we give credit to.
Yeah. And I was scrolling through the poll and I also saw public speaking was up there as well.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, I can see that there's a lot of different ways that people are experiencing this. I think the initial thought that comes to mind is some of this is systemic, if I'm being really honest. And I wish that I could tell you that, you know, by you changing your behaviors, everything would change on this list. And I don't think that's necessarily true, you know, and it's why there is that kind of advice that I was sharing earlier around external posturing and playing the game and understanding the rules of the game. One thing I do notice in a lot of diverse leaders, because of a lack of sponsorship and mentorship and opportunities, and even kind of in the personal network, not having the same kind of access to information as non-diverse leaders, I would say that sometimes your starting point is different when you're entering your career, or no matter what your level is at, your starting point may be a little bit farther behind on some people who might inherently just have more of a network and more privileges. And so some of this is definitely systemic. And I don't think any of you all should internalize all of this being on you, because again, the opposite of confidence is shame. And I think shame is a really big part of the experience of diverse leaders in the systems that we're in. So it's kind of the first thing I want to say about that. And then look, I think, you know, lack of recognition, some of the advice that I was sharing earlier with respect to managing up, it's really important that you're staying close to things that are working and are visible. You know, I selected those pieces of advice because I thought they were really poignant. I think it's really important to also be vocal about your successes and break it up into bite-sized pieces so people are hearing from you frequently. And when they hear from you, it's positive news or it's progress, and you're kind of enrolling them in your success. Another kind of challenge or gap that I see with diverse leadership is sponsorship. You know, you probably have mentors who are giving you advice behind closed doors and helping you with things to really help support your career development. Sponsorship is just as important. And sponsorship is about people who are raising your name in closed doors. People, when opportunities are coming up, that they're bringing you up, hey, so-and-so is actually such a strong fit for this. Have we considered her? So enrolling sponsors and thinking about having sponsors as well as mentors is really, really important part of this. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to go into a ton of detail on each of these, but sure. Those are some initial things that come to mind on the number one kind of cause here around recognition.
And so, Nancy, one more thing about you, because you call yourself a recovering perfectionist. Mm-hmm. How did you change? You know, what have you done to modify your behavior and attitude to put you in a healthier position in relation to, mm-hmm. you know, achievement?
So let me start with a quote. The quote that I read that really hit home for me was something along the lines of, your results are often a direct reflection of your self-beliefs and your self-identity. And what that did for me reading that quote was I felt empowered by that quote because it gave me agency. It gave me a sense of agency in, hey, are my self-beliefs and self-identity where they should be to bring me the results that I'm wanting? And so it inevitably brought me back to the inner work of self-acceptance, self-belief, being my own ally, treating myself with respect, talking to myself with respect, understanding that failures are just opportunities to learn. And frankly speaking, I think sport athletes, because I work at Nike, sport athletes are a great example of this, where, you know, Michael Jordan and all of these great athletes that we've seen around the world, they've learned from their failures and they didn't let those setbacks hold them back from greatness. But what you also definitely see is that they believed in themselves and they put in the work to, you know, meet their dreams. And so I really think that that kind of relationship with yourself is really critical. When you're a perfectionist, you are your own worst critic. True. You are the worst critic in the stadium, how you're speaking to yourself. You wouldn't dare to speak with that tone or that language to people you care about. Mm-hmm. So it's being honest with yourself on that. It's being honest with yourself that that's not okay, that you deserve better, and stepping into a different relationship and dynamic with yourself. And it requires lots of therapy, but it's worth the investment because, man, when you're on the other side of that or making yourself towards the path of the other side of that, things just feel lighter and easier because you're not being held back so much by that voice. You're able to take meaningful steps.
Marianne said something that is echoing something you said just a few minutes ago. I think the beginner mindset was a huge tip for perfectionism, not expecting to be the best at something, especially something new. Yeah. Continue. This is great. We're all tuned in, Nancy.
Love it. Okay. Another skill I wanted to talk to you all was about body. So posture. Oftentimes how you hold your body is indicative of how you're feeling on the inside. When I look back at photos of me growing up or earlier in my career, I can see just through the picture in my body language that I was feeling shy, not confident, uncomfortable, nervous. You know, so much comes through in our posture. So I wanted to give you some tips, and maybe you can even try them while I'm talking through them here, on when you're entering a space where you feel you might be triggered with imposter syndrome or fear or shame. Here are some things that might help you before you enter and just finding some grounding with yourself. The first is what I call microdosing mindfulness. And these usually take about 2 to 5 minutes. So you can really fit it in, you know, in between meetings or during lunch. And some examples of this would be completely shifting your attention to your feet on the floor. Just bringing your full attention to your feet and all the sensations of your feet on the ground. And what that does for you is it allows you to connect with that feeling of being supported by this really solid floor and grounding. And it allows you to connect back with earth energy, for lack of a better word, and really remember that you're here and you're held. Some other tips, connecting with your breath and bringing yourself back into the present moment, what I call skyward gaze. So looking out the window and just looking at the sky and noticing that the cloud formations look really unique and different today, and just allowing yourself to lift up from the four walls that you're in. Another one that I really like is just going to the bathroom and washing your hands and just feeling the water flow, just feeling it flow and just being really conscious and present with the sensations of water energy. Mini dance breaks. I don't know how many of you do this, but if you're working from home, sometimes just putting on some music that brings you joy, brings you back into your power. And having a little dance break can be so, so effective. Sometimes it's also about having a tool with you. So sometimes, for instance, if someone's going into an interview or a performance review and they know they're going to feel anxious, what's something you can bring with you in your pocket or your hand that brings you comfort? Maybe it's something from your family, a relic from your family. For me, it's like a little wooden stone that's made of carved wood, and it connects me with nature and a feeling of groundedness. And yeah, sometimes I bring it in my pocket with me in meetings where I feel like I might need the extra support. And you guys have all seen the Wonder Woman pose. I do think that that kind of posturing helps if you're really making it about taking up space. So maybe try it now and really pay attention to what it's like for you to take up space in the spot that you're in. And what I want you to really embody as you're doing that is that you're feeling yourself while you're doing it, and you're allowing yourself to just take up that space and not be apologetic about it. So these are all exercises that help us access more connection with ourselves, more connection with nature, with our bodies, and ultimately with others as well. Because when we're in that connective state, I think we bring that into the conversations we're in. And you can't underestimate how much we're affected by other people's energies and vice versa. So it's also very, very grounding for you and for the people around you. So the last part of this that I'm going to cover is just the practice part and the repetition part. And I'd love to talk a little bit about habits. So earlier when I started this conversation, I talked about coming back from my sabbatical in Southeast Asia and coming back from a little over a month of surrender and play. And coming back in Europe, what I notice is how rushed people are. I mean, and how glued they are to their devices. And I think it really provides a barrier in our ability to connect and to be present in life. And ultimately, because we're so rushed and so distracted, I do think it also impacts our confidence. We can easily be kind of thrown off, you know, which is why I like the naming around grounded confidence. How do we bring back to grounding? So what I've realized coming back is how important our habits are. And I've been experimenting with new habits for myself. And we often think of habits as just self-care habits. So going for a run or diet or things like that. So I thought I'd bring in some different kinds of habits that you might want to think about for yourself that complement those really important wellness habits, but offer something a little bit different as well when it comes to confidence. The first one is, what do you habitually allow into your energy field? What are you consuming when it comes to information, advice, social media? What kind of energy are you habitually allowing into your energy field? And what would you change? Another one would be, who are the people you're spending the most time with, whether it's in person or virtually? And what kind of state do you notice that you're in when you're engaging in those relationships or when you're interacting in those relationships? What kind of beliefs about yourself and about the world do those relationships foster for you? And what would you change? What kind of judgments do you habitually make about yourself and others? Because those are also habits. What do you choose to consistently believe about yourself? And how does that influence your actions? And if that's not working for you anymore, how could you retrain your perceptual awareness? And what I mean by that is what you notice and how you interpret things. How could you retrain that so that you offer a more generous and kind interpretation, both to yourself and to others, and make that a habit? This is where gratitude, for instance, is a really great practice. And lastly, what are your habits that help you recenter and ground yourself in this ever-changing, chaotic world? And how could you introduce those regularly, especially during times when you're feeling like you're not on your game and you need some support? And that can include so many different things. You know, it can include prayer, journaling, knitting, coloring, drinking a cup of tea consciously with some jazz music or Christmas music, meditation. You know, the goal here is just to find what works for you and brings you back inward. So changing some of these habits can go such a long way in supporting you in your journey towards confidence and in your journey in leadership and allowing you to stay grounded and ultimately be kinder to yourself. The extra spaciousness that having these routines in place will help provide for you, because the great thing about habits is they automate a bunch of stuff and you just gain benefits regularly from them, is the extra space allows you to focus on bigger changes you want to make in your life and in your career that require more of your energy. So this is also about managing your energy.
This is amazing, Nancy. And we've got some questions and comments. Someone wrote, I have ADHD. Sometimes it is hard for me to focus and not let my mind wander or multitask. Do you have any tips or advice to help productivity and focus?
I feel for my ADHD friends. I definitely think that there are additional challenges that come with having ADHD. And so I think the traditional advice doesn't always really apply. Some things that I've heard from friends who have ADHD that help them focus, I'll share that because I think that's most helpful, are leveraging some tools that allow them to stay on track. So one tangible example my friend gave me actually was these bracelets that they sell. You may be familiar with them, but they're kind of disposable bracelets where you write down things you absolutely have to do that day. And then throughout the day, you tear off the bracelet as you get done with each of the tasks.
Good idea.
So it's a really visible way of keeping track and keeping yourself accountable. And just your goal that day is to get through those critical tasks and get those wristbands off. That was really nice. And I do believe there are some apps that support focus and productivity for ADHD folks. But my knowledge or expertise on this is fairly limited because I don't work with ADHD personally through coaching or through my own personal experience. So I would definitely look into more credible experts in this field, but hopefully some of those pointers already were helpful. And I also think like it's not easy. So don't feel like it's just something you have to navigate by yourself. I think there's a lot of support now in this space.
Someone wrote, just this is an affirmation of what you've been talking about. I call it being your own best friend. You wouldn't talk to your best friend like that. So why talk to yourself like that? I love that example that you gave of checking yourself. If you wouldn't talk to somebody else, you wouldn't talk to your best friend that way, do your best to stop talking to yourself in those extremely critical ways. You know, sometimes You can tape yourself, like audibly tape. What are you thinking and feeling? And listen back to that and go, ooh, that was harsh, or that was compassionate. That, because a lot of times I think we don't hear ourselves. Mm-hmm. We don't even know we're doing it. Here's a question. What about always wanting affirmation or recognition and the need to validate? And, you know, it's all, you often don't get it when you're needy. How do you manage that?
Mm. Have you heard of attachment styles?
Mm. No, tell us.
Yeah. So there's literature on this from psychologists around attachment styles. The framework is basically that there are three different attachment styles that we have as human beings. One is anxious attachment style, which is a little bit of, it sounds like what you're describing, which is that it's perceived as being needy and being a little bit clingy and needing a lot of attention and validation. Avoidant attachment style is the person who runs in the other direction as soon as things feel difficult or too serious or too intimate. And then secure attachment style, which is finding a way to hold your ground and stand your ground and have a healthy give and take in your relationships, but be able to source a lot of the validation and love that you need from within. Esther Perel also does a lot of great work on human relationships and these types of topics. What I would say is it comes back to what we've been talking about, which is fostering that healthy relationship with yourself, being able to source love and validation and affirmation with yourself. And I do really believe it's, if it's accessible, that it's a really great thing to work on with a therapist, just with some support, depending on how seriously it's impacting you. But what I would say is it very much brings you back to kind of our inner relationship dictates so much of our outer results and our outer dynamics.
And Nancy, as we started, we only have a few minutes left. We talked about the fact that you had the sabbatical. And I think that many people, many professionals in America, and you work for an American company, even though you're not in the States right now, feel nervous about taking off, stepping away from work for an extended period of time, even though as we listen to you, we see the benefit was not only for you, but probably for everyone with whom you interact. Mm-hmm. What advice could you give for the folks here who might be considering that, but could feel nervous about their job security if they would step off of the wheel for that long?
Yeah, it's really fair. I fully acknowledge that, you know, I was privileged to be able to take that time off. I've been at my company for 8 years. And there's a company policy that allows for employees who have been with the company for a certain amount of time to be able to take off for a sabbatical. So firstly, I would direct some of you to look at maybe the policies that your company has, because I do think that a lot of companies offer some kind of incentive or reward for people who are at the company for a long time. So I took advantage of a policy that was at the company. Separate from that, prior to taking this sabbatical, I used to also do this in small amounts. And I think that is accessible to all of us. Sometimes we feel like we have to have a big plan for taking time off. You know, sometimes, and I'm going to speak to the moms in the room, I'm not a mom, but sometimes it's just having that day off. Kids are in school or in daycare, and you're just at home. And you just took that day off to just enjoy and treat yourself.
For yourself.
For yourself, exactly. And to whatever that intention is, let's say surrender and play, to really explore what does surrender and play look like for me in this one day that I've gifted myself. So I think the intention, the commitment, and the showing up for yourself is a really important part of it. How much time you can take off and the length of that, I think, is really fair and really depends on your circumstances and what company you're at. But I certainly would encourage you all to think about what taking even a mini little break could look like and what your soul is really needing right now.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm going to adopt the dance breaks, the mini dance breaks. That sounds like so much fun. Thank you so much, Nancy. This was awesome. Yeah. Thank you for bringing the energy of your sabbatical to all of us. You know, I want us to check back in with you to just see, are you holding on to that piece? Because it's one thing to come back and get back in the grind. But as you can see, there are a lot of hopeful people. You gave us some wonderful tools to support the inner work, inner confidence that can help us to be great in our external world. And we hope you hold on to it just like you've shared with us and giving us the inspiration to do the same. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to have spent this time with you. And if there's anything you take away, it's just to be your own inner ally first.
Be your own inner ally. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Nancy Choi. Thank you to all of you for joining us for this wonderful engagement about cultivating inner confidence. Until next time, have a great day and make it count. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. We appreciate you choosing to spend your time with us. If you love this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. If you'd like more information on how we empower professionals mid-climb, visit our website at kahila.com. That's KAHILLA.com.
And as we say at Kahila, step up into your boldest self, and while you're up there, reach down and help another person up.